Hey, hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Whatever time of the day it is that you're tuning in, welcome to the Resilient Society podcast. I am Naturally Cinnamon, also known, I'm Cinnamon Key, also known as Naturally Cinnamon. And I am joined by my co-host.
I am Cherise, one half of this beautiful duo. And we want to lovingly welcome you into this space that plants seeds of healing.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Seeds of healing. And we're going to get to that book plug in a minute because I don't remember if we've talked about your book, but we will now. We are here to help you cultivate your resilience. And we are live now in the Resilient Society on a Friday night and on my Facebook page. But as part of being in the Resilient Society, you get cool extras like the live Q&A that happens after this episode. The audio from tonight won't air on podcast platforms until Monday. So join us at theresilientsociety.com. So Cherise, how are you?
I am good. It has been an amazingly crazy week. I am super excited. My son and I are coming home. We're going to Florida for a month.
I'm not gonna act like I'm not excited.
I am so excited. We're leaving on Sunday. He is in school virtually. I am home. We have a lot of stuff that's going on, and I think we just need a different environment as we're trying to figure some stuff out, be around family for a little bit. While I'm dealing with some health stuff, this will, in hopes, give me some clarity and some peace, being able to sit out on the beach. So I am get out of this snow here in Philadelphia. So I am super excited to be coming home for a little bit.
You know, there's something to be said about warmer weather, you know, and I think there have been studies about weather and seasonal depression and emotions and things of that nature. So yeah, if you can,
yes,
get on out and come on home.
I'm so ready. I'm so ready.
So y'all, I'm like, she's ready. I'm stoked. I have not seen my friend in live and in person in
2012.
Years.
I think it's 2012.
Oh my God.
I left Miami in 2012. Wait, did I see you? Yeah, 2012.
That's it.
Wow.
Lord have mercy. They might peel me off of her.
I'm so excited.
I'm telling y'all gonna have to, anybody listening that's in Florida that may be in the vicinity, just let it happen. Whatever y'all see, just let it happen.
Yeah. Let the tears, and this is going to be exciting that we may even get the opportunity to do a live podcast together. Yeah.
Even if that wasn't on the schedule, we're going to have to put it.
Yeah, we're going to have to do
on
that.
The schedule so the people can see how goofy we are in person.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. So lots of feedback from last week's episode.
Awesome.
Lots of feedback. First piece of feedback was, y'all sounded like y'all were having fun on the episode. I was like, we love talking about healing. And I'm like,
you don't sound fun other times?
I don't think so. I think because, okay, here's the thing. We're so focused on we know we have to get through this part. And I think we've been like so focused on, okay, let's just get through this so that we can move on to the other parts. But we kind of have to address certain things that are not so, you know, light and airy.
Right.
Which is okay. That's kind of comes with the territory. Yeah. Right. I mean.
And last week was very off the cuff. Like it was, we came together, what, maybe 30 minutes before and was like, okay, let's just kind of talk about, you know, the comments and put out what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Right. Exactly. Oh. That was cool though, but that's all right. Because now that was a glimpse in to how, you know, the direction we're moving, you know, we had to, We had to hit some of the heavier parts first so that, you know, it's kind of like when you're digging, you know, to create, to make a house, to build a house, from the ground up, you have to dig and go deep first before you can build up. And you have to set the foundation. And sometimes you may run into, you know, a boulder that's up under that rock, and you got to stop and grind up that boulder so that we can lay the foundation and build upwards. So we had to get through some boulders.
Awesome.
That's
What other
it, but
feedback? Did you get any other feedback?
That was the majority of the feedback,
Okay.
was that, wow, okay. And one person told me they were even laughing. I don't even know what part they were laughing at. But hey, you catch a conversation with me and Sharice at any point. Somebody gonna say something funny. It's bound to happen.
Oh, that's great. I'm
But
glad
I'm
that
glad
people
that
were
we
able
were
to
able to
see
clear up some
that.
stuff, you know. So that's cool.
Awesome.
Awesome.
That's
So
awesome.
we are going to move forward and pretend like I didn't even forget what my name is at the beginning in the intro of this episode. Tells you what kind of week I've been having. Just things all over the place where it's like, hi, my name is, wait, that's not my name. This is my name. But
Yes.
you know what we are going to do now? We are going to get this episode started and receive our trauma nuggets.
Super excited. So, I am reading this book called Our Inner Ape. A leading primatologist explains why we are who we are. And it's by Frans de Waal, a Dutch primatologist and ethologist that says the reality is that we are bodies born of other bodies, feeding other bodies, bodies having sex with other bodies seeking a shoulder to lean on or cry on. Bodies matter, which is why anything related to them arouses emotions. That's the end of the quote. And so, what that said to me is that our bodies carry our joy, our bodies carry our pain, our bodies carry our trauma. So, whether we believe that we have or are experiencing trauma or not, our bodies will always speak what we are afraid to admit. So, according to the CDC, heart disease is the leading cause of death amongst Black women in the United States. And one in 16 Black women over the age of 20 have coronary heart disease. Unhealthy diet, physical inactivity, and stress are some of the risk factors. So, in this, what I want to say is please, please, please make sure that you are taking care of yourself. If that's meditating, praying, yoga, stretching, deep breathing, walking, therapy, all of the above or none of the above. Whatever you are doing on your self-care journey, please remember that it is a necessity for our overall health. We have one life to live, and let us not just survive it, but thrive in it. And that is our trauma nugget for the day.
Don't just survive in it, but thrive in it. Y'all know what? That's the trauma nugget, but that's gonna be the doggone woman law of the day. I don't think we even need, don't just survive. Say that again.
We have one life to live, and let us not just survive it, but thrive in it. So I think like for this, it is, we're always just going, 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 going. And we're just, a lot of us are just surviving. And we're not having the opportunity to smell the roses and take a break and enjoy life. But this is the only life we have to live. We don't, this isn't dress rehearsal. This is it. And so why not thrive in this one life that we have to live instead of just surviving in it?
So while I gather my edges.
Yes, ma'am.
While I gather my edges, we're going to receive a, we're going to receive a greeting from one of our Facebook followers, somebody who's tuning in from Facebook. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
As well. I hope you tune in. Make sure you share this with any of your friends. So, okay. The next segment is supposed to be Hey Gorgeous, but I need to skip over to Woman Law.
Okay.
We have one life to live. We need to say that one more time.
Instead of surviving in it, let us thrive in it.
Mm. So I think I may have said this on the podcast before. I'm not sure. And if I haven't, it's definitely in the Resilient Society on the Patreon. They've been watching me go through some health changes. They've been watching me do resilience in action. So in the Resilience Society, we don't just have things that we're telling people, oh, this is how I became resilient. While there are people that are on the path to resilience, on the path of resilience to recovery, we are monitoring somebody who's gracious enough to offer themselves so we can watch it happen live and in color, right? So the first person is me. I'm putting myself out there first.
Okay.
And because of a health issue, I've had to make, I have to do things differently. Let's just say it that way. Because I'm not going to give away for free what people in Patreon get exclusively. But they've seen it. They've watched it. It's happened, right? I reached a point yesterday that it got so emotional because it was so hard.
Okay.
It was really, really, really hard. And talk about the trauma that I put my own body through for so many years that it was holding the trauma in a certain area that I didn't know it was holding it. So I knew of other areas, like I know I hold stress in my shoulders and my neck, you know, I know that, but there was certain, there was another area of my body that the trauma was, it was like locked up like this. And in the middle of exercising, it did, it just shut up. And when I say the pain, Charisse, like I was crying.
Oh, wow.
Like crying, full on tears on the floor, on my back, rolling, trying to roll over to my side, like crying in pain. And then the tears of pain became tears of anguish. Because I was like, how did I get here? How did I get here? And why did I let this happen? And why didn't I notice it? And it was just so much. I was like, I don't even want to deal. I was just like, I don't even want to deal with this right now. I don't want to deal with this anymore. And I kept reminding myself, you want to be able to live to see the fruits of your labor. You sacrificed your health so that you can build these businesses that you wanted to build. And now here we are where, okay, the health cannot be sacrificed anymore. And I want to address it because I want to live. Like I want to be here to see it. Right. And so I had to keep reminding myself, you want to be here. You want to be here. You want to be here. And that's, that is stronger than I don't want to feel this pain. And so that's why when you said we only have one life to live, and instead of surviving it, we need to thrive in it. I'm like, if you don't get up out my business, if you don't mind, please and thank you. You know, it's like, so did you bug my house yesterday? Is that we got to today's trauma nugget slash woman law. I'm just like, wow. And so I'm like, oh, so my body was holding what I had been doing to it for so many years.
It is.
So Sharice's Cash App is, and y'all can pass the collection plate.
So it is. It's a lot, man. It is a lot that we put our bodies through. And it's like, we have one body. It's not like we can come home and I do it too. And it's not like we have one body and we can come home and say, you know what, let me, or we have more than one body and we can come home and say, let me take this one off and put that one on. And my motto has been, I don't want to be old when I get old. So yeah. I have been intentional. And so I understand that, like when you're starting, when you're exercising and your body is like, hold on. And you have to, because I've gotten massages in places and they may touch like the back of my arm or something. And I'm like, wait, because I'm like you, I carry it here. So then I feel all of this trauma in my body in these other places that I'm not realizing is there. And so I have been intentional with my health, with eating, with exercising, because I'm like the same way. I'm trying to build these brands and I want to be here to see them as a success. I don't want to have my life cut short because of unhealthy decisions that I'm continuously making.
Right.
And so one of the things you and I have talked about a lot is that we are a mind, body, spirit people. So we can't address one part of ourselves without addressing all of us. I can't address myself spiritually and then compartmentalize my mental health and my body. I can't say, oh, I'm going to go to therapy and then continue to eat bad and then continue to neglect my spiritual health. We are women. And so we have to connect it all and we have to work on it all. And it is oh my God, it is so hard. It's so hard. It is so, I quit life every day. I walk around my house singing, I'm a Toys R Us kid. I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. I'm like, I don't want to do this. And so I know my son thinks I'm crazy because he's like, what are you? Yeah, I'm a Toys R Us kid. Don't even worry yourself about it. It's an intentional effort, like to continuously keep going and like, I'm going to do better. I'm going to be better. I want to see my son live his life successfully.
Right.
I don't want anything to happen to me because I continuously make bad decisions with my body as if I can just say, oh, let me go get another one.
Yeah. Yes. Hi. I think my warranty ran out on it's a 40-year warranty, right?
Right.
Well, I would like to, before my warranty expires on this body, I would like to go ahead and trade it in for an upgraded version. Can you give me the specs on the new model so that can I customize it? What are the customizable packages and how much is it? It's like, man, that was fun. Right. That was fun putting all that weight on. All right, let me go get another one.
It
doesn't work like that. Doesn't work like that. So, yeah. That's awesome. And it's funny that you mention body, spirit, and mind. And because that's why we close out every episode with a spirit support nugget. But the other part is that we're going to honor somebody who helps people with their mind. And as we are mental health clinicians, you and I, we also need somebody to help us with our mental health. So that's why today's Hey Gorgeous is who it is. And let me tell y'all something. Well, Hey Gorgeous is a segment where we highlight a woman who is godly, active, wise, just, uplifting, sincere, and soulful. Soulful. Let me make sure y'all know what I'm saying. And today's Hey Gorgeous honoree is Jessica Jefferson. I am honored to have even met this woman. I'm going to read directly from her website, her impeccable website. I'm going to read directly from it. Hi, I'm Jessica. I'm the founder and chief clinical executive officer of Social Work Social Support based in Davie, Florida. For more than 15 years, I started my career in mental health. I've had just about every position you can imagine, from front desk receptionist to clinical director of a multi-million dollar agency. I launched my business in Davie, Florida after the stress of my dream job, it's in quotes, dream job, landed me on my deathbed. I was the clinical director of a social work agency that prioritized my work over my well-being to the point that I was literally wasting away. I realized that all of the things that I thought would define my success, the salary, the title, the responsibility, did not matter. And I'd begun to hate the very things I spent years chasing after. That day in the hospital, I vowed to never again sacrifice my sanity for a salary and to do everything in my power to equip others working in caregiving capacities, superheroes, as I call them, to do the same. And that's when Social Work Social Support was born. This Davie-based practice is changing the game for other mental health professionals, moms, first responders, military servicemen and women, clergy members, caregivers, public servants, and many others for whom the burden of fighting for others diminishes their capacity to fight for themselves, both in Davie and worldwide. I teach these superheroes to save themselves first. In doing so, I empower them to thrive in their roles and serve from a place of substance, not sacrifice. As a result, families are stronger, patients receive better care, congregants get the best from their spiritual leadership, and communities are better supported. That is Jessica Jefferson. She's known as the social work superhero.
Wow.
And that, yes.
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 Awesome.
It's just like this whole episode. Let me tell y'all who are listening something. We did not talk about none of this stuff before. I did not know what the trauma nugget was. Charisse didn't know how I was crying during training yesterday. I didn't decide until 5 minutes before we went live that Jessica was going to be the Hey Gorgeous, and it's all working together. Amazing. But yeah, I met Jessica because I was just like, what in the world is the you know, the therapist superhero? Like, what does that mean? But yeah, how great can we be in trying to help others in the mind, body, spirit, you know, aspect if we are not together in the mind, body, spirit aspect? Like, how do we do that?
Absolutely. It's so necessary. It is so necessary. Absolutely. And we don't realize. We don't. I think oftentimes, I love that superhero thing because I think sometimes it is so important for us to take our cape off. And we don't realize that even Spider-Man took his suit off. Even Superman took his suit off. And take a break. And that doesn't make us less of a superhero when we take care of ourselves. It is so important.
It doesn't make you less than to take care of yourself. And that is, that goes back to the trauma of being a Black woman, the trauma of being a Black mother, the messages that we receive and how they impact us. And that goes back to that. It's funny. I have a client that is having a very, very hard time with that, that she has decided, you know what, I got to make sure that I take care of myself. And the pushback that she's receiving from the ones closest to her that she was she thought would be the last people that would be as unsupportive as they have been of her taking care of herself and not them has really impacted her. So yeah, we got to be careful about that. Yeah. And another thing we have to be careful about is how those influences come to us from our places of employment. You know, we just read that Jessica was basically sent to her deathbed behind agencies, bureaucracies, and whatever else she had to deal with while just trying to be a helper of others to where that didn't work. And that brings us to our topic of the day.
Yes.
The trauma of being a Black professional as we continue in our trauma of being series, you know, when we just try to be ourselves, just try to be human, and we're not permitted to just be the trauma of being a Black professional.
Yeah.
Chris, what are your thoughts on this topic?
So in here, I think this is such a sensitive topic for me because this topic that is centered around equity. And so when we discuss these topics on equity, it's not some arbitrary, inconsequential statement of past wrongs done to our ancestors. It is a current, living, and breathing system that impacts us today. And so when we think about like women's rights and being a professional Black woman, I just want you to think about this. In 1920, the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified and women were given the right to vote. 1920, that is only 100 years ago. 100 years ago that women were given the right to vote. And I want you to understand that that's not all women. That was white women.
Right.
That was white women.
Okay.
Black women did not achieve that right until the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Sin, when was Mama Betty born?
1951.
My mom was born in 1956. So we're not.
They are older than our ability to vote equally.
And still, even in that, just because the Civil Rights Act was in place in 1964, even today, if we look at the election from this election for 2020, all of the chaos. We had to have Stacey Abrams go and take over an entire state to get people to be able to vote.
Right.
For what is supposed to be a right. She's out fighting people.
For something
women,
we're supposed to just have.
Just have this right. So it is not some, so when we have these conversations around equity and equality, we are not talking, we don't even have to go back to slavery.
Nope.
We don't have to go back. We talk about our mothers, our living and breathing mothers. We don't have to go, I don't have to go and dig up and do a genogram. I don't have to do that. I don't have to figure out, oh, my great grandmother, I don't have to do that. I just look at my mom.
Right.
My mom. And so
here's another way to look at it. Not just your mom. How many years is, you said 1964, right? Mm-hmm. And you were born in 19 what?
77.
13 years.
77.
Before you were born. 13. Only 13 for you, 15 for me. Between the two of us, an average 14 years before we were born. That's mm-hmm. it. This wasn't like a lifetime. It wasn't right. lifetimes before we were 14 years. The Bill was still a child.
Exactly. When we were, because people were still killing people about this bill. So it wasn't that it was received and everybody was like, yay, everybody has the right to vote. That's not what happened. Mm-hmm. They were still killing people. People are still fighting today for the right to vote. So it is, we are still even in a space of talking about first when we talk about Black women. Mm. So in 2020, the first Black woman was elected as vice president. Mm-hmm. So on Wednesday, January 20th, 2021, women joyfully sat in front of their TV, their iPad, or whatever, with their pearls and chucks on, celebrating Vice President Harris. Mm-hmm. And it was then that we also saw the royal goddess that is Michelle Obama.
Love her.
Who remains the forever first lady, because this was the first time we were able to see ourselves in these professional positions of power. Mm-hmm. So we are still talking about first. Mm-hmm. In 2021. And so, because I knew, I did some a little research. And so Forbes, Fortune 500 released an article yesterday. So for the last 4 years, no company on the Fortune 500 had been led by a Black female CEO.
Mm-hmm. How many are there now?
Three, I think the article said. But in the list 66-year history, only one had ever held the title. And her name was Ursula Burns. She was the former CEO of Xerox. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, I think her name is Tashonda. I don't want to say her name wrong. Mm-hmm. Tashonda Brown Duckett, the mm-hmm. second Black female CEO in the Fortune 500.
And what is she CEO of?
TIAA.
Oh, okay.
So we're still talking about first in mm-hmm. 2021. Mm-hmm. So she's the third ever Black woman to be a full-time Fortune 500 chief. And she's the second that was announced this year. So this is when we talk about the trauma of being a professional woman. Just think about the struggles of trying to be able to be seen as an equal. When my grandfather taught me that I am not allowed to just show up to the party. I don't have that luxury.
Right.
And when I show up, I have to be the best. I have to be overly prepared just for people to see me as an equal. Mm-hmm. And that is a real life thing that lots of Black women are still experiencing today. Black women and women of color are still experiencing today.
Well, and honestly, even though Black men probably can get there a little quicker than Black women on the gender, mm-hmm. only on the gender.
Right.
There's still some trauma that they endure as well.
Exactly.
From being that Black professional. So I want to introduce something. Mm-hmm. A lot of talk has been, I'd say maybe in the last 2 years, it's become super duper popular. The imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. right? And so I wonder, how, and this goes back into the resilience factors that we brought up last mm-hmm. episode, but how many C-suite Black people don't suffer from imposter syndrome? You know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. how do you not? And so for those right. listening that may not know what imposter syndrome is, hang on. Oh, I just had it. All right. Well, I'm going to just paraphrase basically. Mm-hmm. It's feeling like you don't belong, like you're a fraud for being in a particular space that you're in. Mm-hmm. That's super duper cinnamon layman's whatever, right? But it's basically feeling like, what am I doing here? Loosely defined as doubting your abilities,
right?
And feeling like a fraud, and it disproportionately affects high achieving people who find it difficult to accept their accomplishments. Many question whether they're deserving of accolades. So I go back and say, If you were not taught at a young enough age that you could sit in certain circles, sit at certain mm-hmm. tables, and contribute just as much. Sitting there is one thing. Mm-hmm. The fact that you have just as much, if not more, to offer that mm-hmm. other people at the table do, that's another hurdle. If that's not expressed to you, ingrained in you, told to you over and over again at a young enough age, when you do sit at that table, mm-hmm. how do you not have the thought of, what am I doing here? Right. I'm not supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. When Black people for up to 40 years ago are told the myriad and super duper long list of things that you cannot do, places you cannot go, words that you cannot say, books that you mm-hmm. cannot read, knowledge that you cannot have. And you yeah. have the nerve to read the book, to go to the place, to learn the thing, you have the nerve. How do you not at some point feel or think, I'm not supposed to be doing any of this.
Right.
None of this is right. How do you not deal with imposter syndrome?
I think it is something that we do all deal with. Maybe a lot of us do not have a name for it at this moment, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that it's not happening to us. And so I think because even once you get into those spaces, a lot of times you're not even fully welcomed in those spaces. Mm. And because then you're not welcomed in those spaces, your input is not valued. You're told if you express yourself, you're being aggressive or you're being emotional or you're being whatever. Name that they're calling you, mm-hmm. it is easy to see that maybe, to think that maybe I shouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. Or when you even have to be in some of these spaces and you have to dumb yourself down. And mm-hmm. all of the books that they've told you you shouldn't read, that you did read, and all of the things that you did do, and the places that you did go, that they told you you weren't supposed to go, that you did do, then you have to even be careful with sharing the knowledge that you have, because it's like something is wrong with you. Mm-hmm. But even in the narrative, I remember I was in the Army. And I had somebody, two different men, tell me, you're pretty for a Black girl, and you're smart for a Black girl.
Okay.
So...
Okay.
I probably need to talk about this with my therapist because this still makes my heart beat fast. Like, you have put me
you've put me on this pedestal, and you have excluded all of these other beautiful, intelligent, powerful, gifted women because I was taught how to fit in. And I know how to code switch. I know. And so you don't know that I know how to code switch. You think that I am this rare bird. I'm this rare creature because I fit the narrative of what you think. Black people, Black women should look like and act like. I remember I went to Idaho. I was in Idaho. And I was doing a training. And at the end of the training, I was the only Black person there. The lady said to me, "You're nothing like the Black people I see on TV."
Give me a minute.
And this was like in 2010?
Remember how I said I carry stress in my shoulders and neck? When you said that, my neck started hurting. Okay, how did you respond to that? Could you even respond to that?
I did not respond immediately because I was completely and totally, I had no words because I never, but then I asked her, "What do you mean? I'm not like, what are the Black women that, what are you talking about? I don't even understand what this means." And she had been watching some foolishness on VH1, MTV, one of those TV shows. And that was what she said she thought all Black people act like. So then I said, "Oh, you're nothing like that racist lady that I saw that had on that Ku Klux Klan robe and the color drained from her face." And she said, "Why would you say something like that?" That's what I saw on TV. Seriously? She was so offended. She didn't talk to me anymore. I was like, okay. Because now you're offended because I gave you the exact same narrative you gave me. And you didn't like being identified by what I saw on TV. But you thought it was okay. And you assumed you were trying to give me a compliment. This backwards insult, you thought I was going to do what? Shuck and jive and be excited for the fact that I don't conduct myself like people do on TV? You're ignorant. And so in these spaces, these professional spaces, a lot of times you encounter a lot of people that don't look like you. And they have this thought of how you're going to conduct yourself. How you are going to, what you're going to say.
What are you going to bring to the table? It's almost like the moment, and let me tell you, I feel it the moment I walk in the room because I know how I sound on the telephone.
Yeah.
I know how I sound on the telephone. And it's not intentional. I'm not attempting to, I'm going to say this the PC way. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am not attempting to imitate any particular culture or ethnicity. See, I know how to code switch too. So I know what you're saying. We can code switch. I can use my vocabulary.
I am articulate.
Right. And well read. Yes. I know how to read.
and I'm educated in the same schools that you sent your children to.
Except I did my own work. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm fully aware of the way because of my name, when I send in my resume, it tells nothing. And I mean nothing. You can't tell a thing. My last name is Key. That is Welsh. That's Welsh. So, and no, I'm not Welsh. We all know how this Negro chick got her last name. So we're not going to go down that Black history trail. But that last name goes back. It's Welsh. And then my first name is Cinnamon. Very many people outside of my culture and ethnicity that meet a Cinnamon have ever met a Cinnamon. There was a news anchor when I was growing up that went by Cinnamon Stouffer. She was white. There was apparently, I don't know this, some old black and white TV show where the secretary's name was Cinnamon. She was white. So there's a good subset of people that when they see the name Cinnamon without a picture, they could very well assume Cinnamon Key is a white girl. They could very well assume that. And then I know how I sound on the telephone. I know how to speak. Like you said, I know how to articulate. And I know how to use the tone of my voice. I know how to be softer with who I'm speaking to on the phone. And I do know how to make sure that I get my point across. And I am assertive, but yet soft. And I am understand, and I'm well-read, and I'm educated. And all of that comes through on a business call. And then I show up and it's with like
dreads.
What the hell are we supposed to do with her? who is she? Who are you? And I'm looking at her like, so you mean tell me you never went to my website? Like at no point did you go on my website. In my email signature is my website. At no point did you click on it. You weren't even curious.
No.
You weren't even curious?
No.
Because I'm sorry, for me, if somebody emailed me or got on the phone with me and announced that their name was Brown Sugar, oh, I'd want to know what you look like. I'm curious. Yeah. Whose mama named him Brown Sugar? But yeah, no, I'm fully aware that when I step into the room, people have to adjust. I can feel the air. I can feel the inhale. I can feel it. Where it's like, oh. And it's not just a black white thing. Because I live in South Florida. There's a heavy Hispanic population here. And let me tell you, when it comes to breakfast, I love getting my breakfast from Casavana Cuisine. I would love my eggs revueltos and my jamon. And baby, don't get me started on the croquetas. Get me a nice little cortadito to go with it and let me dunk my Cuban bread. I can Cuban breakfast with the best of them. Because it's
And it's, even when I lived in Miami and my hair was natural, and I had people come up to me and they didn't want to interact with me once they found out that I was not Dominican.
Oh.
Because people would come up to me and start speaking to me in Spanish. No. You're not Dominican? No. And then they don't want to deal with me anymore.
Wow. Wow.
So it's difficult to even to be in these spaces to oftentimes not be able to be your full and authentic self. Knowing what you bring to the table and not be able to give all of that.
Yep.
Because people have this expectation of you.
And what's funny is, how do you then already have that? That's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-2020.
Mm-hmm.
Where everything was magnified.
Yeah.
I want to read to you a piece of this Forbes article that was published, I think, June of 2020. Mm-hmm. And it was talking about a particular Black male professional. And let me see. His experience mirrors that of many Black professionals in corporate America who, amid a pandemic that has exacerbated racial inequities and created financial duress, must now deal with the emotional trauma of seeing more Black bodies killed at the hands of police officers and vigilantes. This weight leaves Black workers in a quandary, one in which they're shedding tears offline, then forcing an air of joviality and lightheartedness in video meetings and on work calls.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on hearing that?
It is disheartening, but not surprising. I think I read an article about Black social workers that kind of said the same thing, that in this pandemic, the struggle for Black social workers is that we are the helpers. We're the helpers. We're the helpers. Two, we're not even in this pandemic. We're not even considered frontline workers. Three, we are one of the first places that people who are in need go. And so now we have had to put ourselves at risk to continue doing our jobs, providing services for people, while we are watching disproportionately Black people die from COVID, and then all of this police brutality and vigilante and the exhaustion that a lot of Black workers are experiencing. Because now you're not only taking the weight of your work home with you, you now also have this fear of COVID that you have to, it's this catch 22.
Right.
Do I continue to work to provide for my family, or do I take this deadly disease, go out and potentially contract this deadly disease and then take it to my family? What do I do?
Right. Right. It's in, and we, but we got to work.
But we got to work. Not,
because we can't, what we can't do is put our Black family in a position to need help. Because then there's a whole other group of stigmas that we have to face when it comes to that.
And then even in that, the first thing for social workers, the first thing that gets cut are resources to social services.
Yep.
So we're already working with 10 pennies, trying to give 10 pennies to 20 families. And you're cutting resources.
Yep.
And it's, I watched or read something like even about these grants that were given out during the pandemic and how people were stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars and they're now being arrested and the money is spent to fund their lifestyle. And not provide these services to people. And so then the first thing that gets cut are the social services. And how do we continue? Then when you cut the social services, then you cut the jobs of the social workers.
That's right.
And then what do? When we're already underpaid.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a lot. It is a lot being a Black professional. It is a lot.
And it's funny because I was on a Zoom last night, and the Zoom was, I think it was supposed to be at least, about servicing marginalized communities.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have my own soapbox about the term marginalized communities and who is identified as a marginalized community and who they're identified by. Because if you're a white person and you're looking at me, a black person, and you want me to come talk about marginalized communities, who told you we're marginalized? Who told you that? Where'd you get that from? Who told you I was marginalized? What does that even mean to you? I said I wasn't going to get on my soapbox, and yet, let me jump right back off because, but what we were talking about, the funny thing is I did mention, she was like, what do we do? We meaning up and coming social workers, students, and those just entering the field. What do we do when we're talking to someone from a marginalized community? I shudder. Maybe they're angry and they don't know it. Who don't know it? Who don't know what? Who's mad and doesn't know it? I said, okay, well, I'm not going to speak for any quote unquote marginalized community, but I'm black and it's Black History Month. And so I'm blackety black. And so I'm going to speak as a blackety black person. We know we're mad and can tell you why.
Why?
And for you to think that and we don't know.
All the way back to slavery, we can talk about.
I can't go back to last week.
Exactly.
And for you to assume that I don't know because I show up with joviality and lightheartedness, you're going to assume, but she's black. She's got to be mad. Maybe she doesn't know she's mad. I'm not allowed to be mad to you. I'm not allowed. So first of all, don't you ever think that we don't know we mad. Mm-hmm. Don't ever think that. We know we're mad. You need to be grateful for the fact that we're not behaving as mad as we actually are. Mm-hmm. So don't think that. And if you ever have the nerve to ask, why are you mad? Baby, have a seat. Because we know why we're mad and can tell you and can articulate it well with facts and clarity. We know why we're mad. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to this next sentence in the same Forbes article. The last paragraph said, well, not the last paragraph, but a really good paragraph. And then I'm going to, I'll put a link to the article in the show notes for anyone who wants to read it. It says, in recent years, business leaders have championed bringing one's whole self to work, calling on their employees to show up authentically. But this particular black male professional says that if black people were to really bring their authentic selves to work, they wouldn't even bother coming in because they'd be mopey, depressed, and greatly drop the morale of the entire company. We know when we can't show up. So don't think that if we do show up, and we don't appear angry, mopey, irritable, depressed, and bringing down the general morale of the company or the company that we're keeping, that we're not aware. We're very aware. And our awareness is actually what's driving this decision to stay home.
Right.
Or to show up as though it's not a bother. Because we know what would happen if we didn't.
Right.
So now what we're having to do is sacrifice our authenticity. This ain't cool. You know what I'm saying?
It's not. It's not cool at all.
Yeah, I tried to hold the lightheartedness on that Zoom call, but by the third time she said angry and they don't know it, I was just like, look, I'm like, all right, sis. So I was just like, okay, here we go. We're doing this. Okay, we're doing this. And that's I'm gonna put that article.
Thank you.
In the notes because I thought it was a really good article. I wish I had seen it when it came out. Because it was published in June of 2020, just right in the heat of heat so of many pandemic. Things.
So many things, yeah. And of the pandemics, not right. just the pandemic.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. You have any last words about the trauma of being a Black professional? Like, what we want to do is not just talk about the trauma, but what's one or two thoughts you have on the path to healing?
So I think it's important for us to develop great self-care routines, mm-hmm. Because the only person that we really can change is ourselves. Mm-hmm. And since we know that we still have to go into these places and into these environments where we have to, we aren't capable of really expressing ourselves, even though employers are asking for our whole authentic selves to show up, we have to develop our self-care routines. And we have to understand that our self-care routines are not something that we do when we get home. So are not exclusive to home. So they can be done in the car. They can be done at work. If it's listening to music, coloring, drawing, anything, drinking tea, taking a walk. I am a huge proponent of taking smoke breaks. I don't smoke, but I'll take a smoke break. Mm-hmm. And that gives you a chance to get outside, to walk, get some fresh air, some sun on your body, and develop a community of like-minded professionals. And they may not work where you work, but that space that you can talk or have someone that you can talk through your day, mm-hmm. so that you get it off of you. A lot of times, and like a lot of things that we kind of talked about, we end up internalizing a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So one of the good things is to have a space where you can dump off the end of the day. So those are big, big things. Self-care routines and developing a space where you can dump the stress of the day off of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm actually developing an online course called The 7 Factors of Resilience. And one mm-hmm. of them is creating a safe space. You have to have a safe space. And that's not just physically, but emotionally as well.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yes, mm-hmm. we do need a safe space, which oftentimes is either our home or a space in our home mm-hmm. is one of the more common safe spaces. But my safe space is in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, my safe space is my home, you know, mm-hmm. and even if I have guests in my home, I can still retreat to my room. And mm-hmm. even if, you know, my dog decides he wants to have a party in my room, mm-hmm. I can retreat to my bathroom. And that is my absolute sanctuary.
Right.
Right. But when I get away and go visit my parents, mm-hmm. it's like a whole rejuvenation mm-hmm. Because I'm safe physically and emotionally mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. space. Yeah. And like you said, having a place to dump stuff off. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we need, and there's many times where we're like, I don't want to call so-and-so because they're going through their own stuff too. Why? You know, they don't want to dump their stuff off on you.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be everybody. Like right. it doesn't, I don't think it needs to be social media, but even if you have a small village or one or two people mm-hmm. who you guys are kind of going through the same thing, struggles at work, right. That can become your community where you're supporting each other through the day. I have a couple of different group chats that are going on. Mm-hmm. Where each one provides something different for me. And it's a space where we're struggling with different things. We may be struggling with different things, but we're supporting each other through mm-hmm. Through that, because at the core, our issue may be the same.
Right.
So it's important to have that, to talk about how we're feeling and what we're going through.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So while you're thinking about who your safe space may be, mm-hmm. We're going to go ahead and transition where your safe space will be and who is part of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to go ahead and transition into our spirit support. Because it is time to close the episode. However, we are not going to leave you hanging. Not going to do that. So my lovely co-host is going to bring you some spirit support.
All right. So I want to talk briefly with you about a prophet in the Old Testament by the name of Elijah. Elijah was chosen by God to be one of his prophets. He was a praying man. He was a leader. And he also suffered from depression. His hopes were crushed. He became sick in his heart and he was suicidal. But in all of his brokenness, God still used him. In 1 Kings 9 and 5, the text tells us that then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." So what I want to remind you is to never underestimate a nap and a snack. Self-care is an absolute necessity. No one is excluded. And God will provide us what we need to be healthy if we listen. There are people that need the gifts inside of us, but we must first remember to take care of ourselves. So remember that God uses the ordinary to do the extraordinary. And that is your spirit support for the day.
Woo! That's going on Instagram. Never underestimate a nap and a snack. Straight up from 1 Kings 19 and 5. Y'all heard it first in the Bible.
Yes, never underestimate.
At all. Oh my gosh, that was awesome. So we are going to close this out. Thank you again for tuning into the Resilient Society podcast. To submit a question to us, click on the link that's going to be in the show notes. And who knows, your question could be read and answered live on an episode. Be sure to rate us and leave a comment on your podcast listening platform and share us with a friend or a few. So whatever time of the day it is that you've tuned in, we bid you good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night.
Good night.